the Ulysses, man's greatest achievement. A ship capable of traveling to distant galaxies, but a freak accident leaves the ship helpless. Its AI, damaged, dangerous, plays a deadly game with the two surviving members of the crew. If they indulge the machine's newfound passion for science fiction and fantasy trivia, it will permit limited access to the astrogation matrix and star drive. For astronauts Clive Ashenden and Rob Wickens, the choice is clear. If they ever want to see Earth again, they must define the A to Z of SFF.
A is for Attack the Block. Movie. Continue.
Now, we were talking not that long ago about Ant-Man, the Marvel movie, the end of Phase 2 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
We were just a few light years back.
A few light years away, over there that way. And we, well, the big issue that a lot of people have with Ant-Man is that it's not the film that they initially signed on for, in that it's not the film that was directed by Edgar Wright and written by him and his writing partner, I suppose. Is that a fair way of putting it?
His writing partner, well, certainly with Ant-Man it was, that they were working together for a period of time. Joe Cornish. The writer-director of Attack the Block.
Indeed. So, yeah, that's kind of interesting to see. It was his debut movie, shot quick and cheap.
Well, you say that, and certainly by sort of blockbuster standards, it was quick and cheap. Mm. But by sort of UK cinema standards, it's actually quite a large budget for a first film. You know, perhaps three to four times what you would expect a sort of first time filmmaker to have for their first budget. So it was a low budget film, and yet, you know, there was enough budget to have lots of crane shots and so on, and obviously practical and CGI special effects, so which are all very well done. So you know, they're not on penury streets here.
No, I mean it's got a certain gloss to it, and it's a cracking little science fiction movie, which has a very good reputation. Deservedly so, I think. Particularly seeing that it's quite playful around the idea of your traditional science fiction hero, because what we have in Attack the Block isn't a traditional science fiction hero in any way, means or form, do we, Clive?
No.
Care to elaborate?
I feel like I'm going to diverge with you on this film, because when I first saw this film, I hated it.
Right.
I hated it with a passion. I recognised that it was very well made and it had great ideas in it, but I hated it. When I revisited it, that hate sort of mellowed to a dislike, which, stroke grudging affection. Do we say? But that's as far as I can go with it, really. I mean, it's when you start off with a group of heroes in inverted commas who start off by mugging a young woman, and then sort of say you should empathize, sympathize, and sort of go along with these characters. That's tough at the beginning, because you know you have this character who's just been menaced with a knife, pushed to the floor. You know, it's had a really kind of violent, upsetting experience, and then I realize that that's part of the whole arc, is that you have these characters, and then especially the leader, who is played by future Star Wars star John Boyega, in this sort of breakthrough role. He's very charismatic, sort of silent, brooding charisma. And you see that actually, despite that cowardly first act, he's actually a very brave, intelligent character. And he goes through this arc where, to the end, he's prepared to sort of sacrifice himself for the whole block. And that stuff all works. It's just that initial first reaction is really tough to get past for me.
I know exactly where you're coming from there. I think it took me a couple of views to actually figure out that what Joe Cornish was kind of doing was playing around with the whole notion of the likable hero and the whole sort of save the cat kind of thing, where the first thing that you see your hero do is something that endears you to him or her, and makes you want to root for them, for him or her. And what you get in Attack the Block is completely the opposite of that. You get these characters that in most other films would be either like the initial opposition or just thugs.
Well, I mean, it's Attack the Block. When in the time it comes out, it's coming out at around the same time as a lot of what were called hoodie horrors, with this sort of what they call in the UK chavs. This kind of, I guess, underclass of, well, hoodie wearing, violent gangs of youths. And you got a lot of these sometimes quite reactionary horror movies where they were cast as these sort of like, as that's almost in the same way that you would get in Assault on Precinct 13, as them almost like these faceless hordes that were sort of attacking the usually sort of middle class heroes. And perhaps he was intending to sort of subvert that genre, because it was quite widespread at the time. You've got things like Eden Lake, F, the list goes on, Cherry Tree Lane. They're pretty much, there was like its own little sub-genre of British films. I mean, to a certain extent, things like Eels, Them, the French film. So, it ties into that, and then I guess you could say subverts it, because they do make a point of sort of, humanizing these the gang. Is this sort of, you find out some of them are quite are much more sort of likable and approachable characters. They're very sort of chatty. They've got different sort of humor and nicknames for each other. Especially sort of Pest, played by LSS Male, who's the sort of smart ass, I guess you could say. I could see what they were going for, and it's difficult. And I was more sympathizing with Jodie Whittaker as Sam than I was with Moses and the gang, at least initially. Even though, every time John Boyega comes on screen, you're sort of transfixed by him. But I sort of felt like his character almost belonged in a different film, one where it's like a kind of like a Little Caesar or a Scarface or something, and where he's absolutely going to end up as like the sort of kingpin of the neighborhood, because he's just the most, he's more badass than anyone else, so.
It's very much a film about territory, isn't it? You've got a very sort of closed in location, in terms of everything taking place in and around this one kind of tower block.
That's right, and it's sort of, it's invaded by aliens, and that's pretty much it. So, and complications ensue.
Hilarity ensues also.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but I mean, this is very much a cult film, and I think part of the reason for that and that it didn't sort of break through and have lots and lots of sequels is because we're focused on the gang a lot of the time. All their talk is in this street slang, which you've got to think for an international audience, especially, that's going to be quite difficult to tune into.
Yeah.
Because it's spoken quite fast. I mean, you'd have to have a bit of an ear for an English accent anyway, British accent. And then, you know, it's sort of, you know, they're talking over each other a little bit. I mean, I have to say, even though perhaps, I was familiar with certain bits of slang because I'd seen other films or I was familiar from other media, a lot of the time when the gang's talking, at certain moments the gang's talking very quickly, some of it's just sort of washing over me. It's just like chatter, and I'm not necessarily picking out all the there is some nice sort of gags that are in there, but at least on the initial viewings I wasn't necessarily getting all of that.
Cornish is on record as working very closely with his young cast to make sure that the dialogue was as authentic as it could possibly be. Whether that means that maybe in America they released a subtitle version of Attack the Block, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think your ear does get accustomed to it, even if it's not something you're familiar with initially, you know. So, but perhaps it's just another thing which makes it a little bit hard to sort of sit into the film. You know, you've got that initial kind of... like, I guess, kill the cat moment, we'll call it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you've got the fact that you've got a lot of, you've got to get your ear into this sort of, it's not quite NADSAC, is it? You know, it's not as extreme as the Clockwork Orange sort of language, but it's their own sort of, you know, local patois. So I think those things perhaps don't help the casual viewer to get into it, and probably didn't help me, at least in the initial viewing. But, you know, there is a lot of stuff to like here, you know, like I say, John Boyega is great. Nick Frost is amusing as Ron, the drug dealer, the pothead drug dealer. Should we talk a bit about the aliens, the alien design?
The alien design is really good in this. It's very original, in that basically what you have are, well, it's kind of a cross between a wolf, a gorilla, with these weird kind of luminous blue teeth.
Yeah, well, you've kind of got this, there's sort of two distinct types of aliens, aren't there?
Yeah.
The initial one we see is this sort of smaller, I guess you sort of like hairless albino, like baboon, eyeless baboon thing, which we later find out has a particular sort of, relevance to events that are happening, which is quite, I think, nicely, that revelation is nicely sort of paid out and makes sense. And then, as you say, you've got the main ones, which are these sort of blacker than black, sort of hairy quadrupeds, that to me seem reminiscent of the sort of design of the Space Invaders on the side of the Space Invader sort of cabinets.
Oh yes, absolutely.
Where you've got these sort of black sort of hairy figures where you just see the sort of eyes, and in this case they have this gag where you're just seeing these sort of glowing eyes, but actually it's the mouth that's sort of half closed, and the teeth are sort of, as you say, these really vivid kind of glow in the dark blue, and only sort of stop glowing when you kill them.
Just very, very original. Like I say, if you hadn't ever seen the side of a Space Invaders cabinet, you'd probably be at a loss as to where the inspiration for those came from. Now I see it.
Well, I don't know if that's the truth, but to me that was the sort of visual connection that
No,
I got.
now I
But
see
you
it's
know, it's
blindingly obvious, but there you go. I mean, yeah, of course it is. But yeah, they do. They work as a threat. They're fast moving. The fact that they are blacker than black means that they sort of appear out the shadows, and they can climb, they can run, they're fast, they're strong, they're deadly. So yeah, they're and there's lots of them, which is the other thing. So that they make a more than capable foe.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like I've been quite harsh on Attack the Block, but that I'm just trying to convey that I had an initial very strong sort of anti-reaction the first time I saw it. But there's a lot of great stuff in this. I really like the alien design. I think Joe Cornish is an accomplished sort of director who understands camera movement. Seems very he's obviously sort of homaging films that he's loved, made by sort of Spielberg and Lucas and certain people. It's very slickly made, considering I believe they had did have
Definitely.
quite a fast sort of shooting schedule. And the sort of the young cast work really well together. I like the sort of the way that they undercut the sort of gang thing by have them sort of having to call home and sort of tell their mum, "Oh, mum, I'm out playing football," as they're tooling up with samurai swords and the like, and that sort of stuff is where it sort of is where it works really well. You've got this sort of incongruity of them often sort of putting on these gangster poses and then having a sort of go home and have yeah and have their tea or hide in a bin,
Yeah,
so.
definitely. I think that's where it works best for me. The fact that it kind of takes on these quite well-known themes, the science fiction siege movie and things like that, and just really neatly subverts them all, either by making your lead characters incredibly unlikable at the beginning, or have them be by kids. So you've got that sort of built-in vulnerability as well. So even though they're acting like hard guys, and they are just a couple of them are like 8, 10 years old. So you've got that whole kind of thing going on as well.
Well, and I have to sort of admire the fact that he's willing to kill them off.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's no sentimentality in this movie at all. No one's safe. Which again, I really, really like in that. So, I mean, on the whole, I can see where Clive's coming from. I can see why, to a lot of people, it's a film more to admire than to like. But I think it's a film that's worth the attention.
I'd agree. I would, despite what I've said, I would agree with that. That it's definitely worth checking out. And it's and the more I watch it, the more I, am prepared for that initial sort of kill the cat moment, shall we say?
Yeah, yep.
And I can pick up on more on those sort of little bits of humor and grace notes and so on. So, yeah.
There we have it then. Slightly different views, but at the end, we both agree. Go see this film. What do you reckon, Cyclomedia? Is that enough for you?
You just got murked.
I thought I'd changed my trousers as well. Oh, he spotted that. Oh, never mind. I'm taking that as a yes.
Oh, systems are coming online. I think that is a yes.
Oh, there we go. Murked or not, we're out of here. Okay, let's leave the block, shall we, Clive?
Yep, we've been attacked. We're leaving. Running away. 3, 2, 1, go!
Bye.
A to Z of SFF was written and performed by Rob Wickings and Clive Ashenden. The show was produced and edited by Rob Wickings at All Hallows Post of Reading, the finest sound available anywhere. Would you like to know more? go to www.theatozofsff.com. Like us on Facebook as the A to Z of SFF, or follow us on Twitter at the A to Z of SFF.